It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Tyler Ditter with a story about a veteran whose world opened up after joining the military.
Lori McNeil Saylor of Kenosha knew before she graduated high school that she wanted to see the world. She was ready for something different, for new experiences outside of her childhood home in Alabama. So she joined the Navy, traveled the globe, and made lifelong friends from many cultures along the way. Saylor's daughter, Erica Saylor, interviewed her about her experiences as part of StoryCorps' Military Voices initiative.
My name is Lori McNeil Saylor. I am 59. I am also located in Kenosha, Wisconsin. I was originally born in Kalamazoo, Michigan. I moved to Mobile, Alabama after my mom passed. I was 4. And this wonderful woman named Alice adopted me. She already had 4 kids, my siblings. We grew up outside a lot, playing together, running around barefoot, just doing kid stuff. When did you enlist? I wanted to be somewhere other than Alabama. My thought process was I didn't want to go into 13th grade, as I put it, because I didn't want to go to school with the same people that I went to high school with. I wasn't really comfortable with a lot of those people. Mm-hmm. I was a lot shyer then. So when they came to the school, it sounded interesting and I signed up.
What was basic training like?
You know, it was so different because now you're living with people from all over the country. I think that's where my interest in learning about other people came from, because there were, I said, people from different cultures. And I remember this one young lady, she was just this tiny little curly haired blonde. And she asked me, "Can I touch your hair?" And I looked at her and I was just like, "Sure." And afterwards she said, "Why is your hair different from mine?" And I said, "Because that's the way God made it." And she was like, "Oh." It was so easy for her to understand that.
Is there someone that you served with you remember fondly?
My 2 most favorites are your Aunt Flo and your Aunt Trina, because I met one on the bus and the other one in boot camp. And we've been friends for over 30 years.
How do you think your time in the military affected you?
It opened my eyes a great deal as far as education, how to save money, just things that I hadn't really learned yet. You know, it gave me a lot of opportunities, you know, semi-free education, traveling. It definitely opened up my world and gave me the travel bug. That's the one thing I think is probably one of the most awesome things that the military did for me. I was there when they first put women on board ships. I was there when the Cold War ended, when Russia came to Norfolk, Virginia. I got to see that, you know, and I think I still have a Coke bottle with the Russian writing on it. So there are things that I got to see and experience that a lot of people don't get to do. So,
and you never would have.
Right. So I'm very grateful for the things that I was able to accomplish in the military.
Do you have any advice for someone who is interested in joining?
I believe traveling, learning about other cultures, it's probably the best thing that you can do for your own sense of being. It helps you open up your mind and your eyes, and you get to learn so much. So definitely education, travel. And I always tell them, find someone you want to emulate when you first join. Find someone that you would like to be like, and you follow them around. You ask them questions. You learn from them. You know, just absorb it all, make it worthwhile.
Right.
So I wish someone had told me that when I was joining, but I figured it out on my own.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
That was Lori McNeil Saylor of Kenosha, Wisconsin. She shared her experience as part of StoryCorps' Military Voices initiative, which is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Tyler Ditter.
In It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now to the interdisciplinary approach of the forensic investigation degree at UW-Platteville and new research into how to locate clandestine graves, these unmarked sites containing remains. We explore its mock crime scenes and research through its Crime Scene House outdoor research facility. Join in on the future of forensics education, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Patrick Burns is Assistant Professor of Computer Science and Software Engineering at UW-Platteville. Patrick, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
And good morning. And Sarah Goetz is here, Assistant Professor of Forensic Investigation at UW-Platteville, coordinates its Criminal Justice and Forensic Investigation Program. Sarah, welcome to you.
Good morning, and also thank you for having us.
Yes. Sarah, let's start with you. Tell us about clandestine grave documentation. Explain your research on unmarked graves.
Absolutely. So as you already mentioned, the focus of this project was on finding graves that are often created in secret with the intent to conceal and in remote locations. So the focus in the forensic community the past few years has been on finding fast, effective, and easy to implement ways to search large areas fairly quickly. So that's our ultimate goal of this project. But the work that Patrick and I have been doing these last 11 months is really just the start of this process. Our goal was to create a research site, to begin collecting the data, to form this collaboration between forensic investigation and computer science, and perhaps most importantly, to start involving students in real-world applications and getting them out with the field with us to help answer this problem.
What does out in the field look like? Can you explain this research site, how it's set up? Because you also have an indoor facility as well.
We do. So our indoor facility, I guess, to start is a two-story house created by students for students through the UW-Platteville Construction Management Program. And so it's a real house that we use for processing indoor crime scenes. But when we teach indoor crime scenes, we also want to show that those principles can be taken outdoors. And so we need to translate the principles of crime scene processing to things like finding graves. So our research site is in a 1.5-acre fenced field, and we created three clandestine graves. So we dug three holes at three different depths, each with a pig to simulate decomposing human remains. And next to each grave, we had a pit of the same depth, so at 18, 27, and 36 inches. And this allowed us to figure out which changes were because of just digging a hole and altering the soil versus which ones were actually from decomposition. So we monitored each area with a small wireless probe to figure out how much water was in the soil and its temperature, and that was powered by a small solar panel. And then we also were able to compare that to temperature data, rainfall, and the soil temperature and moisture in an area where we've never dug before. So students went out and monitored those sites looking for changes in vegetation and on the surface. And we also monitored them via aerial drone.
That's a really good handoff here, I think, to Patrick. How can drones help find these unmarked graves, and what do they add to this research?
Well, they add a lot in the easy to implement side of things. So law enforcement is increasingly having this technology available to them. Lots of law enforcement agencies regularly have these drones. And we can quickly deploy them into the field and scan an area and record video at the same time. So we have that data for the future. The problem with that is that video can be enormous. So this drone that we have, it's a relatively inexpensive drone, but it records high definition video at 4K. Records at about a rate of 30 frames per second. So the amount of video that we get in even a 20-minute flight is enormous. So the question then is, how do we use that to boil it down? How do we provide information from that huge amount of data into a quick and easy way to digest? So that's the focus of my end of the research.
Yes, I mean, digesting this data, Sarah, and what you're looking for, how does the aerial view impact what you can do in forensics?
So if you were to come out to our research site and stand in the field, we've noticed changes in the vegetation and our ability to actually see the graves, to see the soil on the surface over time. But the longer the graves are in the ground, the harder it is to see things that are just a couple of feet in front of your face. But if you get up 50 or 100 feet, those patterns begin to emerge. So the graves themselves, whether we're digging an empty pit or we actually have a grave with remains inside, look different than the surrounding area. So we're ultimately looking at, can we see things visually via drone? And then in the future, we're hoping to expand this to other technologies. Can we use thermal imaging? Can we use hyperspectral imaging? Can we look at changes in the ground surface? And the ultimate goal is to be able to investigate all these technologies and to find a way for law enforcement to be able to find graves with the most cost-effective solution. So to use the least amount of technology to get the most information.
When you're collecting this data on like soil disturbances and you said changes in vegetation, what exactly are you noticing?
So the basic idea is when you dig into the ground, whether you're creating a grave or digging in your backyard, you can never put the soil back exactly the way that it was before. So it's going to hold air and moisture differently. And because of that and nutrients provided by decomposition, we're seeing differences in vegetation growth. So our graves look different than our pits, which is interesting. And they also both look different than the surrounding area. And interesting, we're finding that in soil temperature, our graves are colder than the surrounding soil in colder months. And as it gets warmer from March into the spring and summer, both the graves and the pits are looking warmer than the surrounding area, which means that we're going to be able, and hopefully in the future, to be able to use thermal imaging to detect them.
Wow. UW-Platteville faculty collaborating on forensics education and research on clandestine graves. Sarah Getz there teaches forensic investigation. Patrick Burns with us in computer science and software engineering. Join in on forensics, combining areas of expertise, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore research underway at UW-Platteville to identify clandestine graves, charting soil differences and drone video footage. The experiments are being done at their outdoor research facility of the university's Forensic Investigation Crime Scene House. Join in on technology breakthroughs for finding unmarked graves and burial sites. 800-642-1234. UW-Platteville's Sarah Getz is forensic investigation faculty, and Patrick Burns with her is computer science and software engineering faculty. They stay with us. So, Patrick, we've seen drones being used in warfare, drones being used to monitor extreme weather and for so many other uses. Do you think drones in this capacity in, you know, studying crime scenes or, you know, unmarked graves, are they being used to their full capacity at this point, their full capabilities?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I mean, the first and most basic use is in documentation. So a drone can fly over a crime scene and record everything it sees in high fidelity. And that's that exists as a permanent record of that crime scene. So law enforcement could go back and review that. The question is, do they have effective tools for doing so? Do they have any kind of applications that will automatically process that video and visualize the data in, as I said before, a quick and easy way to digest? And can they make notes? Can they annotate? Can they use that in courtrooms? Now, that's not my expertise. I rely on Dr. Getz for that. But that's what we're working on here. Not only how to process the video in order to extract useful information, but also how do we present that to law enforcement?
What surprises you most here at this point in the research now that you're, you know, about a year in?
Well, we're still in the infancy of this research, but what surprises me most is some of the amazing undergraduate students that I've worked with. So there are challenges with doing undergraduate research as opposed to a graduate student. Undergraduates, they vary in their educational background at this point, which is not surprising. They're going through their undergraduate education. So you can't push too hard, you have to meet them at their level. But the amount that they've accomplished in the last year is that's what's surprising most.
Sarah, how about you? What's coming up for you as this research goes on month by month? What surprised you?
I think the biggest thing that surprised me, other than our students, as Patrick mentioned, is the fact that I expected there to be potentially maybe one approach to this problem. I expected to know what we were going to see. And as the data are coming in, although we only have a very small sample of three graves and three controls at this point, it looks like depending on the season, depending on the depth of the varial, depending on what data we're looking at, we're actually going to need to use completely different approaches looking for different things. And so what turned into one project continuing to the next year could easily become six components to a project. Which is really exciting to give those opportunities to students and as we move forward, but it also creates a lot of complexity.
Why use a pig as a specimen?
So pigs are often used as an analog for humans. They have similar body weight. Their skin is very similar. There's a lot of things that we can't get from pig research, but there are obviously logistical and ethical concerns for creating a human decomposition facility.
Sure, yes.
So at least in these very early stages, we can get a lot of really good information from pigs as analogs, and then we can collaborate with human decomposition facilities to see whether these results will actually translate in exactly the same way to real world applications.
And Sarah, UW-Platteville is using its weather station for this grave project. Can you explain the role in the weather station?
Absolutely. So the weather station was funded actually by a university grant for scholarly activity improvement. And we purchased the weather station. It monitors local temperature and rainfall, as well as collecting all of the data from all of those wireless probes that I mentioned in the different areas. And we're actually using that for several different projects on campus, looking at how fingerprints weather over time compared to the temperature and rainfall, and also comparing the data from our weather station to data on campus versus at the airport, because even small fluctuations, differences in temperature and rainfall between close areas that are close, relatively close in geography, can influence our understanding of decomposition. It can change the way that we estimate how long someone has been dead. So it's really important to understand how much those things vary, even within a small area.
How long do you monitor the graves? How long does the study go on?
That's a very good question. We had originally planned on moving our probes to another set of grave sites later this year. But as it turns out, we're still seeing differences between them. So ideally, we'll continue to monitor these for the next few years. And this project will continue to expand as long as we can find the funding for it, which is a perpetual problem. But we hope to be able to apply for state and federal grants based on these data that we've collected. So this project will be around for years to come.
Patrick, what do you make of the interdisciplinary approach to this project? You know, bringing your computer science background, software engineering to this, how do you see that in light of trying to find new discoveries in forensics?
Oh, I'm fascinated by the continual overlap between computer science and all other disciplines. In fact, I just started working with a faculty member in the mechanical engineering department to use drones to measure bridge deformation. And the number of topics that can make use of computer science essentially any topic can make use of computer science. So it gives me an endless supply of research ideas just by bringing my skills to the table.
Talking with Patrick Burns, Sarah Goetz on their latest research project at UW-Platteville. You can join in on forensic challenges of unmarked graves in this research, 800-642-1234. Sarah, I really want to bring this up because studies have demonstrated that some forensic methods used in criminal investigations cannot consistently produce reliable results. And over the years, we've seen forensic science really come under fire. And we talked on our show with the Innocence Project, their recent book, Junk Science. What is your assessment of this profession?
That is a big question. But as you mentioned, since especially the mid-2000s, there's been this increasing need to reevaluate our methods, to really look at the science that they're built on, to collect more data, and to talk across the disciplines about what we're really doing and what it means for those that are accused in particular. And so I think the discipline is going in a great direction. I think there's more awareness that we need to be very conservative in what we say. We need to have large samples. We need to do good science, ultimately, because our results are not just an academic question. They have real life consequences for those that are accused and for finding information for families that have been waiting to hear about their loved ones.
I want to also turn to a recent program we did on green burials and just kind of seeing what overlap you see there about natural burials. And we talked with Gail Free, who's president of the Viroqua Cemetery Association, spoke to us on new green burial sites.
This is a very conservative farming community, and old farmers who have taken care of their land their entire life see green burial as a common sense approach to their legacy of land stewardship.
Sarah, what connection perhaps do you see between your research and what happens in the green burial process?
I think ultimately this research tells us a little bit more about what we leave behind, what the process of burial actually does when it changes the landscape. Long after most of your body has gone and has decomposed, there's still going to be features of the landscape. You will have made an impact on it, however small. And so I think better understanding that process might be interesting in terms of thinking about green burials and how we use the land and how we interact with it.
Well, Patrick and Sarah, thank you both for joining us. All the best on this research.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Patrick Burns is Assistant Professor of Computer Science and Software Engineering at UW-Platteville, where Sarah Goetz is Assistant Professor of Forensic Education at UW-Platteville and its Criminal Justice and Forensic Investigation Program Coordinator. We have a link to their forensic education crime scene house at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.